Sam was going back, just not to UT.
Well, she grabbed his forearm, at least he won't be visiting. He may have been born in Dallas, but he still thinks Austin is for drug addicts and trust fund hippies.
Sam smiled dryly.
Oh, Jude continued. And I don't know how it feels to be a freshman. I love questions, and my first order of business was coming to see you to say hi.
She served up another of her trillion-watt grins and waved right in his face.
Hi!
She was such a cartoon. Hi back, Sam said, and busied himself with a plate of pastries. I made these for you.
Whoa! For me?
Donuts and cherry hand pies, he said.
Wait, you made these?
He nodded.
Geez, I'm going to be over here all the time, she said. I can't believe you bake.
Well, they're fried, he said. Sam wondered what constituted all the time.
Even better, Jude pulled out her phone. I'm going to tell my friends to come by.
Sam nodded. Jude was good about that sort of thing, sharing and sometimes oversharing. They'd been thrown together at family functions a few more times, and he'd eventually grown to enjoy her consistent stream of conversation. It was a nice respite from the rancor of the grown-ups, and even after the split, Jude never allowed Sam to lose touch, and he'd tried. Jude remembered birthdays and sent silly messages at the holidays with unsolicited updates from her life. Her congeniality was unflappable. Sam, meanwhile, had no idea when her birthday was, ever since he deleted all his social media accounts. "Do you want a coffee or something?" he asked.
"Iced, please."
"Milk and sugar?" Another fact he didn't know about her.
"Tons," she said, beaming.
"Yes!"
A tall brown-haired girl, dressed as if she were attending a desert festival, galloped in, trailed by someone bearing an uncanny resemblance to the tiny Asian girl from the Japanese horror movie The Grudge.
"Yes!"
shrieked Jude back, hugging the brunette as the tassels on her shirt jangled.
"Bitch, finally!"
yelled the taller girl. Their long, knobby limbs reminded Sam of king crabs clasped in an embrace. The Asian girl smiled at him for a second, then changed her mind. He responded with a grimace. Jude untangled her tanned arms and lunged for the shorter girl.
"Hi!"
sang Jude into her hair, practically lifting her off the floor.
"Yay, it's Penny!"
The girl patted his niece's back twice, pat, pat, and locked eyes with him helplessly.
"This is my best friend, Mallory," Jude said, "and my roommate, Penny."
"So you're Uncle Sam," said Mallory, reaching for his hand.
She had a firm handshake, the sort that quickly became a contest.
"I'm Mallory Sloane," said Mallory Sloane.
"Pleasure," he said, refusing to acknowledge her grip. She bit her lower lip in a seductive manner. Sam smiled and quickly said hi to the other one. She waved at a spot slightly left of his ear. "So what can I do for you ladies today?"
"Can you make me a flat white?"
asked Mallory, who kept her sunglasses on inside. Sam loathed the arbitrary taxonomy of fiddly coffee drinks and had long since learned them all out of spite.
"Sure," he said, grinding beans for a short shot.
"Do you know what that is?"
she challenged.
"Yep," he said. "Latte with a modified espresso to milk ratio, with microfoam."
"Nice try, Mal," said Jude.
"What are you having?" he asked. "Penny, was it?" Sam followed Penny's sightline to her shoes, which coincidentally were exactly his shoes, though smaller.
"Great taste," he said, nodding at her feet.
Penny's mouth made the shape of an O, but no sound escaped. Dorm lotteries made for the funniest groupings. Sam's old freshman roommate, Kieran Maheta, used to sleepwalk and sleep pee in a corner of their living room every weekend. Sam hoped that these two girls, the mute and the sex pot, got along for Jude's sake.
"Let me guess," he said to Penny. "You want a bone-dry half-calf cappuccino with a caramel drizzle."
Penny cleared her throat and nodded.
"What are the odds?" he asked her, fairly certain that it wasn't at all what she wanted.
Sam studied Penny out of the corner of his eye. Her messy hair lent her an air of zaniness. She looked like a scribbled in graphite drawing.
"Actually,
May I have an iced coffee? She piped up.
Of course you may, he said pointedly.
Oh, Uncle Sam?
He swiveled to see Mallory leaning toward him, elbows hooked on the bar. Her not insignificant boobs were hoisted to where they almost hit her chin. She lowered her sunglasses with a silver-painted talon. Clearly, too much time had elapsed since Mallory was paid attention to.
What's up?
Is it true that you bake? She asked.
He nodded.
Maybe someday you'll bake something for me, she said, suggestively tilting her head.
He tilted his head to mirror hers.
No maybes about it, Mallory, he said. Eat off Jude's plate right now and I'll have baked that for you. Happy trails.
You're funny, she tittered, sashaying off to follow her friend.
Sam shook his head. There was no way he was going to mix it up with a freshman, let alone a friend of Jude's. Even he wasn't that dumb.
Penny. The three girls sat on a floral couch toward the back with Jude in the middle. They set down their drinks, and Penny noted that Jude's femur was almost twice as long as hers. So, Mallory leaned to address Penny. Jude mentioned you were an only child, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have two little sisters, Mallory continued, sipping her coffee, whereas Jude hasn't had to share anything in her life, let alone a room. Jude jabbed her friend in the ribs and grabbed another donut. What Mal's so subtly trying to tell you is that I'm a slob. Jude took a bite, spraying crumbs in her lap to prove her point. Look, I'm way too busy living life to mull over something as dull as cleaning. Besides, everyone knows geniuses are messy. Mallory plowed on. It's just that I happened to notice earlier that you were highly organized, she said. It's going to make things interesting. I live in Twombly, but you should expect me around a lot.
Ah, Twombly. Rich bitch housing.
Penny wondered why Jude couldn't just visit Mallory at Twombly. They had a Pilates studio in the basement and a screening room that showed movies that were still in theaters. Sam met them with an espresso and set it down on the coffee table. Can you visit more with us? Jude asked him.
In a bit, he said. I'll be right back.
The girls watched him go.
Whoa,
said Penny, realizing what should have been obvious.
It's not just the shoes, she whispered.
What? Asked Mallory in an outside voice. Penny huddled closer. Me and your uncle are wearing the same outfit. Jude and Mallory craned their necks. It was true. They were both wearing black t-shirts with three-quarter length sleeves, black belts with burnished silver buckles, and skinny black jeans with holes at both knees and black high-top chucks.
Oh my God, said Jude. He was such a skater when we were kids. I didn't realize he'd crossed over to the dark side.
Mallory snorted.
Remember in sixth grade when you had the wallet chain and those enormous, disgusting khakis? Asked Mallory.
God, you were obsessed with Uncle Sam. Watch, Jude's going to start dressing in morning garb now. Sam was arranging dirty mugs on a tray. He had a cowlick on his head, an unruly little curlicue that rose off his otherwise very cool hair. He probably hated it. Penny loved when that happened. When a single detail rebelled against the package. She wanted to touch it. Penny looked away before she got caught staring. Mallory bit into one of the donuts.
Ack, she said, sticking her tongue out like a baby. I hate pistachio.
She removed the offending clump from her mouth with her fingernails and set the damp mass on the table. Penny's silence screamed.
Then why pick the one that is clearly pistachio? Asked Jude. It literally has visible pistachio pieces on it. Mal, it's green.
Jude picked up the offending pile of mash with her bare hands and looked for somewhere to deposit it. Penny's silence screamed harder. In a flash, Penny removed a package of wet wipes from her backpack and handed one to Jude.
Then she squirted hand sanitizer in her hands and she couldn't bleach her brain. Best friends were one thing, but this was perverse. Who touches someone's half-chewed food? And who spits out half-chewed food in public in the first place? Thanks, said Jude, bundling the lump into the wipe. How's the pie? Good. Penny passed the rest off and took another half a donut before Mallory tainted the rest. Shit! Jude bolted upright. A lurid red dollop of filling toppled onto her white shirt. With her free hand, Penny offered Jude another wet wipe and a stain stick. Seriously? Mallory grabbed Penny's kit from her lap before she could protest. Clown car much? Are you going to pull out a ladder and a Volkswagen bus next? Penny wanted to ask who in the hell would put a bus in a car, but was distracted by whether or not she'd packed anything mortifying in her go bag. Good lord, it's like a doomsday prepping in here. Mallory pawed through the pouch. Band-aids, chapstick, tampons. I've heard of teen moms, but you're a teen grandma or something. Let me guess, you have little packets of Sweet and Low and coupons, too? How adorable. So adorable, repeated Jude, smearing the stain stick onto her shirt. Penny despised the word adorable. It was trivializing. Mallory continued laying out the contents of Penny's emergency crap bag onto the coffee table as if they were surgical instruments. Hand sanitizer, earplugs, thumb drive, Advil, Q-tips, bobby pins, sewing kit, tiny IKEA pencil. Oh, and a single condom. Mallory held the foil square between her thumb and forefinger. That was it. Penny snatched back the condom and the bag, gathering her things off the table. Mal, Jude admonished, sweeping the rest of the items together. Don't be a dick. I can't be inquisitive, Mallory objected. Besides, I'm saying nice things. She leaned back with smug satisfaction and regarded Penny. You're so organized. I bet you're a math genius or something. Let me guess, you're an overachieving Asian kid who skipped 10 grades. Are you secretly 12 years old and a freshman in college? Penny glared. Come on, you can tell me, said Mallory. Reasonable responses to a mildly racist verbal attack that was also somewhat complimentary. 1. Slap the ever-living shit out of her with the other half of the pistachio donut. 2. Calmly tell her that you are a genius and a witch, and that your binding spells had the added effect of rendering your enemies bald. Especially the asshole racist ones. 3. Scream at Jude, ban Mallory from their room, slap everyone. Come on, Penny, said Mallory after a while. I was just teasing. You know what? Penny turned to Mallory. I'm only being nice to you as a courtesy, she said. You don't get to be bitchy for no reason, and you don't get to be racist to me, and certainly not in such a lazy, derivative way. Penny felt the familiar prickle of moisture at her eyes. She rarely cried at sad things, mostly mad ones. It was a fun and easy way to lose arguments. She took a deep breath and exhaled slowly. Racist, said Mallory. Who the hell are you calling a racist? That's such an offensive thing to say to... Jesus, Mal, said Jude. Stand down. I'm a lot of things, huffed Mallory, but I'm not racist. Said every racist ever, spat Penny. She rolled her eyes so hard she saw brain. The three girls finished their coffees. Penny wondered if her entire college experience would be this much fun. It was like high school, except that it followed you into your bedroom. Great. Finally, Mallory broke the silence. My boyfriend got a new truck. The comment was met with more silence. This is my attempt at changing the subject, Mallory said after a while. Penny relented. What kind of truck? A Nissan. Mallory's boyfriend is Benjamin Westerly, said Jude meaningfully. Who the hell is Benjamin Westerly? He's huge in Australia, said Mallory.
I have no idea what that means, said Penny.
Jude chortled.
Ben's in a band, Mallory explained. He's famous to roughly 100,000 people who absolutely worship him. His fan army's very passionate. Plus, he's 21. Australia is incredibly progressive. They had a woman prime minister. To Penny, Australians felt like off-brand, bizarro British people. But then again, Penny didn't personally know any Australians. Though it said something shady that every other place on planet Earth went placental for their animals while Australians held on to marsupials. Wow. Maybe Penny was racist too.
That's cool, she said after a while.
What did I miss? Sam joined them, setting another espresso down next to his old one. Penny regarded the twin cups.
Jebed, he explained, finally taking a seat on the chair next to her. Penny loved that word. It was the most perfect way to describe the temperature. The word pith was the same. Everything about it recalled the spongy stuff in oranges.
Sam reached over her to grab a packet of sugar.
Pardon my reach.
Penny held her breath and leaned back so she wouldn't creepily fog up his cheek. She caught a part of the tattoo where the sleeve of his t-shirt rode up. It was either a hand or a set of hands. It easily ranked within the top three most erotic sights of her life.
Everything was delicious, Sam, purred Mallory.
Sam's armchair was set slightly higher than them on the sofa, and he crossed his legs elegantly. His right knee brushed Penny's left, and she almost passed out. With a comically small espresso cup in his thin hands, Penny wondered for a second if he was gay. Not that it was any of her business.
So what classes are you taking, Jay?
We're calling me Jay now? Asked Jude. She was visibly pleased by this.
Sam laughed. I'm trying it out.
He rubbed his bicep to reveal a shadow of another tattoo under his other sleeve. It was some kind of animal. Penny's knee felt warm where he had touched it, and she flushed. Penny wondered what the tattoo was. Potentially a horse head. A chess piece, maybe. A black knight. Penny would probably get a bishop tattoo if she were to get anything off a chessboard. They were discreet and effective. Total stealth movers. Mallory and Jude would get queens. So would Penny's mother, for that matter.
Uncle Sam.
Sam could have been in a band. A dreamy, brooding band. Penny thought cigarettes were pointless and smelled awful, but she imagined that Sam smoked and that he looked cool doing it. God, she would totally smoke a cigarette if he offered her one. They'd be a striking pair in their identical outfits, leaned up against a wall and smoking all cool. As cool as glaucoma and lung cancer. Penny had never had a cigarette in her life, and if they did smoke together, Penny would probably have a coughing fit that lasted forever and ended on an audible fart.
Jesus, pull it together.
Seriously, what was happening to her? Besides, she had a boyfriend. She tried to conjure Mark's face and got as far as the general slope of his nose plus his hair. Mark, who'd gotten white kid cornrows in fifth grade and wore the same navy blue fleece all winter without washing it. Sam was different. Sleek. Brooding and angular. An Egon Schiele portrait. Schiele, if she remembered correctly, had been a protege of Gustav Klimt and had a propensity for drawing himself in the nude. Nude. So, Sam said, leaning back and crossing his arms. What are y'all majoring in?
Sheila probably didn't say y'all, though.
Media studies, said Mallory, fluffing her hair. I want to be talent.
Marketing, said Jude. It was the least boring major Dad was willing to pay for.
Sam upnodded, volleying the query to Penny. Penny hated this question. Her answer came off as pretentious.
What was your major?
Penny deflected.
Film, he said.
Oh, the film program at UT is excellent,
she said in a voice a full octave higher than her normal register. I mean, it's the birthplace of Mumblecore, the Duplass brothers, Luke and Owen Wilson, Wes Anderson. She couldn't stop the word vomit. Wes Anderson was a philosophy major, Sam interrupted. She blushed harder. Kill me now. Sam smiled disarmingly.
I don't know why I know that, he said.
Why film? Penny squeaked. On some level, she knew whatever you picked in college didn't matter in the real world. People rarely pursued a career in accordance with their major, though it was a decent Rorschach test for self-perception. It said everything about how you saw yourself. I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, he said. Penny wondered about the past tense. There are so many unbelievable stories going on in the world just quietly happening around you. There's this Hitchcock quote about how in regular movies the director is God, and how in documentaries God is the director. I always loved that. He stacked his espresso cups. Penny knew emoji hearts were flying out of her eyes. She was smitten mitten kittens. She'd never heard anyone her age talk about the work they wanted to do. Not that Sam was her age exactly. Penny swallowed the rest of her questions, whether he felt like a ghost trolling the living, mining their existence for ideas, whether or not he got lonely watching other people the way Penny did. Jesus, you're emo, observed Mallory, scrolling through her phone. Sam chuckled.
I dropped out anyway. Couldn't afford it.
Well, I think college is a sham, Mallory shrugged. I'm here as Jude's plus one and to shut my mother up. We're better off trying to invent an app or something. The four of them sat in silence, considering the depressing reality. Just don't invent an app that invents apps, Penny piped up. The job market's bad enough without you taking robot jobs from the robots. Sam laughed. Sam had resting bitch face until he laughed. Penny had never wanted anything as bad as to make him do it again. God, the app singularity is the worst thing I can imagine, he said after a moment. Penny was thrilled. Sam either read science fiction or knew enough about it to know what to call it when computers got smarter than humans and started to phase them out. Social media would be a mess, she said, smiling. Who's catfishing the catfisher?
Do Android phones dream of electric sheep? He asked.
They both groaned, but a dad joke with a Philip K. Dick reference was Penny's sweet spot. Dad jokes were Penny's favorite. You didn't need to be Freud to figure that one out. His hotness was making eye contact unbearable, and her cheeks tingled pleasurably. Anyway, sang Mallory impatiently. Penny cleared her throat. Sam cracked his knuckles in a super attractive, kind of menacing way. With his arms in front of his chest, she could see more hints of tattoos at his throat. The French word for throat is gorge. And Christ, his was indeed. Mallory said something dumb about empathy and the value of the human spirit. Penny wasn't listening. Sam had somehow found the perfect shirt with the perfect collar, which was stretched out just enough to create this enticing peekaboo effect. Penny thought again about Mark. Mark, who wore polo shirts on dates and only read self-help books that you could buy at the airport, from The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People to Who Moved My Cheese, and the old standby, The 4-Hour Workweek. Good Mark. Uncomplicated Mark. Mark, whose call she'd sent to voicemail twice today. Sam absent-mindedly patted his cowlick down, showing a flash of white above his armpit. Even Sam's armpit was hot. "Do you want to have dinner with us?" Jude asked him.
"Can't,"
he said, and stood up suddenly.
"Work."
Jude nodded, her disappointment apparent. "Maybe next time?"
Sure,
he said distractedly as he excused himself.
Damn, whispered Mallory, ogling Sam as he left.
Damn, thought Penny.
I didn't know Uncle Sam was such an intellectual. Mallory breathed, fanning herself dramatically with her hand. Ew, stop! Jude swatted her best friend's leg. That's literally my father's brother. Former stepbrother by marriage for like 5 minutes, corrected Mallory. And he's not old. He's 21, said Jude. First cousins marry, said Mallory. Wow, said Jude, shaking her head. What? Shot Mallory. Seriously, what's the deal? He's so hot. Dark, but hot. And you? Mallory turned to Penny. What's with your awkward bullshit and then pulling out your flirtation A-game? Yeah, you guys seem to get along, said Jude. Both pairs of eyes studied Penny with new interest. I'm being neighborly, Penny demurred. She turned to Mallory. I can be friendly as long as strangers don't go rummaging through my personal effects. Huh, Mallory said. Whatever, what's his type? Mal, warned Jude. What? Mallory blinked innocently. Mallory, you are not allowed to go for my uncle, said Jude. Allowed, said Mallory. But what if he goes for me? Uncles love me. Don't. Jude turned to face her friend. I mean it. You know I don't need any more drama with my family right now. I'm invoking an ironclad friendship ask. Family? Retorted Mallory. I'm about as related to Sam as you are at this point. You know the rules. Ironclad asks don't have to make sense, said Jude, waving her hand dismissively. Her mouth was a firm, thin line. Penny knew that face. It was when you were so mad you had to train everything to keep still or you'd cry. Whoa, said Mallory. Jude Louisa Lang, do you have sexual feelings for your former uncle by marriage? Stop, hissed Jude back. It's the only explanation, countered Mallory. Ew, no, that's not it at all. Jude sucked down the last of her coffee. Friends hooking up with family makes things awkward and complicated, so can you not? Ah, babe, said Mallory, finally wrapping her arms around Jude. Okay, ironclad friendship ask invoked. You can't fault a girl for wanting to be your best friend and your aunt. Jude laughed. Penny eyed the two girls. Either Jude did have a crush on Sam and wasn't admitting it, or something was up with her family for real. She couldn't imagine Mallory backing down easily otherwise. Penny recorded the information in a new folder in her head. Besides, continued Jude, I think he had a rough summer too. Why? Asked Mallory. Well, he didn't exactly tell me, and he's impossible to spy on most of the time, but... Jude opened Instagram on her phone. Look. She searched and found the page of a Ms. Lola XO and kept scrolling. I think he has girl trouble, said Jude. Penny wondered why girl trouble meant some dude had dating drama and that women's trouble was about periods. Oh, she's super hot, said Mallory. Ms. Lola XO was hot. In fact, Lola's look was psychological warfare. She was pretty by scientific and mathematical standards, the kind of attractive that compelled cornballs to come out with flouncy terms like ravishing or exquisite to describe women. They also almost always referred to them as creatures and definitely females. Lola was long and thin in the way that certain beautiful people forgot to eat or else only nibbled on aesthetically pleasing morsels like Ladurée macarons or sliced kiwi. But it was also the way she dressed, incidentally, as if her destroyed denim skirt were placed to protect the modesty of a prudish audience. She was Instagram famous in the way that some girls just are, as if they were designed to indiscriminately detonate insecurities in other women. Basically, she was the perfect stylistic match for Sam. No wonder Sam dodged Jude's offer for dinner. He probably had way better things to do than hang out with them. Jude kept swiping, a terrorizing merry-go-round of Lola doing things while looking attractive. "But who even has this many selfies?" said Mallory, wrinkling her nose. "Other than a total narcissist." Penny was willing to bet Mallory had more than this many selfies. They admired Lola stretching in a crop top to where the dagger tattoos on her ribcage showed. "See," said Jude. "Sam's in literally every fifth picture from here," she continued scrolling up, "all the way to here." "That's years," said Mallory, impressed. "That's what I'm saying," said Jude. "He was in this perfect relationship and now he's not, and honestly, I've been talking to Dr. Green about it and she thinks he's depressed." "Dr. Green is Jude's therapist," said Mallory. If that were true, depression suited Sam. "So don't confuse him, Mallory," she finished. "He's very vulnerable." Penny thought about the types of girls who loved vulnerable guys, or else misunderstood ones. They were generally the types to marry serial killers on death row. "Fine," Mal relented. "I have a boyfriend anyway." "Thank you," said Jude. "You too," she nodded at Penny, smiling broadly. "Please don't date my uncle." "Pfft," scoffed Mallory. Jude reached over and tucked a tangled strand of Penny's hair behind her ear and patted her cheek.
Sam. Knowing that your only computer was about to crap out on you, despite not having nearly enough money to replace it, can only be described as horror. Horror and terror. Torror. Sam drummed impotently on the trackpad a few times and pounded hard. The pinwheel of death persisted. Shit. He calmly closed the sticker-covered laptop, briefly considering rolling into a ball and ugly crying for the rest of the day. The ancient machine, his trusted steed since junior year of high school, already didn't qualify as a laptop because it had to be plugged in or it would die. Plus, the colors bled together on screen, so you felt as though you were on hallucinogens no matter what site you were on. But if a computer was at a virtual standstill on the information superhighway, it had to be taken out back and shot. Sam breathed deeply and raggedly counted to 10. By his tabulations, he didn't have enough in his checking account to get money out of it. An ATM wouldn't dignify you with a response unless you had the minimum of $20, and Sam had $17, minus the $2 for the ATM fee. The Catch-22 was demoralizing. He needed the laptop to take an online film class through Alamo Community College so he could learn what he couldn't from YouTube tutorials. How to block a shot like Roger Deakins, the best cinematographer in the world. Or delight in the style of Gordon Willis, who DP'd The Godfather. Okay, so he knew he wouldn't learn exactly that in a 16-week course, but forking over the $476 for class and access to supplies was cheaper than camera and gear rentals for 4 months. Only now he couldn't torrent any of the required watching. Sam flexed the toes on his right foot. The sole of his black sneaker was split where it met canvas. He grabbed black gaffer's tape out of his backpack, tore off a piece, and taped the hole shut. The sticky electrical tape solved most issues, except fried motherboards. Maybe he'd stop going outside altogether. He'd shuffle shoelessly from his bedroom to house and back again, a correspondence course taking Sisyphus. He checked the clock above the door, 2:45. That glorious lull between the lunch rush and the 4 p.m. caffeine fix. The only customer was a short guy with a ridiculously coiffed, pointy beard working on his gleaming 13-inch MacBook Air, complete with portable laptop stand and extra keyboard. Sam briefly considered mugging him, even if it was possibly the dumbest idea to rob someone where you not only worked, but also lived. He listlessly thumbed through the discarded copy of the city's old paper of record, the Austin Chronicle, on the coffee table closest to him. Ever since he'd moved in upstairs, his world had become tiny. He wondered if he still possessed the necessary antibodies to venture outside. Maybe he'd get some ancient disease that we thought we were done with, like polio or smallpox. Did people get smallpox anymore? He needed to read a book once in a while,
Isn't that what people in recovery did? Get a hobby? Christ, recovery was so dramatic. Sam could have killed a beer right now. Hell, he could tear through a six-pack lickety-split. He thought about the yeasty bite of a Shinerbock, his mother's favorite, and the first beer he'd ever tasted at 6 years old, and how it had been months since he'd held a cold one to his mouth. Instead, he took a long pull from a glass of water and cleaned. He needed something to do with his hands while his thoughts churned. Sam fluffed pillows, bussed tables, wiped down counters, recycled the papers, twisted the group handles from the espresso machine, dumped their filter baskets with a series of satisfying snaps, and rinsed everything out with scalding water. He was reassured by the way his knuckles felt tight and parched afterward. Sam imagined his rough hands entwined with Lorraine's. Liar Lorraine, his ex. She'd had beautiful hands. Hand model hands, her friends had called them. Long, articulate fingers with slender nail beds. But Sam worshipped her feet. Stubby-toed and flat, she hid them as a policy, refusing to wear sandals in the summer, which only served to make them more desirable. They were hilarious, full of personality. Clever feet that picked up pens from the floor when they thought no one was watching. The rest of Lorraine had consistently been too cool for him. As aloof as a black-and-white photo of a French girl. Sam knew from the second they met that he had to ask her out. He had to. He was 17 to her 19. She was DJing at a tiny club with no sign called Basement, wearing a white silky slip dress. Her hair was pale pink and shoulder length, dyed ultramarine at its tips. Huge swoops of black encircled her shimmering hazel eyes. She was unmistakably sexy. Sexy. Sam hated that word the way other people hated moist or panty. But there was no other way to describe her. The great love of his life was plain sexy. And terrifying. Not that Sam was all the way innocent when they met. From the time he was 11, he hung out with a ragtag assemblage of derelicts who thought it was hilarious that this little kid had no curfew and drank as much booze as they did. Little Sam had a smart mouth, and the ladies loved him. He was selfie bait for older drunk chicks. There wasn't a bar that the kid couldn't get into. He knew everyone, or at least his dad did, and he was the spit and image of his old man. Though precocious as he was, he'd never been in love. That was until he saw Lorraine up there on the dais, neon green headphones, ignoring him. Sam was a goner, sucker-punched and clobbered. He waited an hour to talk to her. Then another. Another two passed. At 3 a.m., when the lights came on, he nodded and asked, "So where are we going?" "Food," she said, tossing her bag at him. They drove to a diner, where she devoured a heaping plate of migas. Sam ordered coffee, and when they were finished and walking out into the street, without warning, she hoisted herself into his arms, wrapped her legs around him, and kissed him. Sam was stoked. Stoked that it was happening, and stoked that he'd grown 3 inches over the summer and could lift her. Her breath tasted of green peppers and cigarettes, and her confidence was mind-blowing. His mother used to say you shouldn't marry anyone you wouldn't want to divorce, and he understood that now. Lorraine was the emotional equivalent of a hollow point round. The exit wound was a shit show. Sam restocked the almond milk, consolidated the baked goods into a single cake stand, and switched out the bar mops. The new ones smelled good, bleach clean. He held them under his nose. Sobriety meant a low-level boredom all the time. Taking pleasure in small, repetitive tasks was the big show of the whole day. Sure, there weren't the dazzling, dizzying heights anymore. No careening around town with the most enigmatic and emotionally toxic woman he'd ever met. There would be no screwing each other's brains out in a dazed, compulsive panic. But at least there were clean bar mops. He admired the neatly folded squares of cotton and rearranged one so the blue stripe lined up in the stack. Right then, as if she begrudged him his tiny victory, Liar texted him. "Call me." Shit. Sam's hands got clammy when his fight-or-flight response was triggered. Under the right light, you could actually see the sheen of moisture appear on his palms. He'd made a time-lapse video of it once. He felt equal parts sick and excited when he heard from her after an absence. The last time they spoke was 27 days ago,
Just one day more and he would have kicked the habit for good. At least that's what the books on substance abuse told him. He thought he'd turned over a new leaf. In fact, he'd even begun jogging. Okay, so he'd hopped around the block twice in his busted shoes, but he'd cut back to 3 cigarettes a day, which for him was the same as completing a half marathon. He thought about the pressure of her lips on his, the lemony scent of her hair. He closed his eyes and considered their last meeting and the bad ideas that followed. She'd stormed his newly small life and disappeared in a mushroom cloud of devastation. Again. After that last run-in, he'd sent 3 unanswered texts before he'd been sufficiently humiliated. The first because he told himself he wasn't the type of guy who slept with someone and ghosted. The next 2 because his stupid brain was gobsmacked and running on a flustered delay. Now, boom. Liar on line 1. This is what she did. It was as if she knew the moment he was able to wake up without wanting to die and couldn't abide by it. Sam stared at the text. Call me. 3 more hours of work to go before he could stew in the dark in his room. What the hell was call me? Only sadists left that message. Sadists and bullies. She might as well have written, gnaw off your hand. Sam knew he was on the right side of history. Let the record show that she was the cheater. He was the spurned lover, the cuckold, the humiliated, the victim. GTFO with your call me's. Not that he wasn't tempted. Sam sighed. Maybe if he called, she'd tell him where she'd buried his balls and his heart. People cheated on people every second of every day all over the world. It's just that Sam couldn't believe it had happened to him. By Lorraine, no less. His Lorraine. Jesus. He'd entombed the event of their actual breakup so deep it had been effectively redacted from memory. Sam leaned on the counter and retrieved the original file from 103 days ago. That fateful morning, she'd told him she wanted to go to the breakfast taco spot before work. The not-that-good spot on Manor that charged extra for pico de gallo. Sam wondered if ordering a michelada with his eggs would be distasteful. He needed something to take the edge off after the night they'd had. They'd doubled down on martinis after a week of fighting about money and Lorraine's crazy work schedule. And while they both knew going out was a doomed enterprise, compounded by Sam's desire to swing by his mom's, they didn't care. That morning Lorraine's hair was pulled into a bun. She appeared admirably refreshed, and Sam was grateful that no matter how much dysfunction there was at home, he could rely on his girlfriend to be there for him. He reached under the table to touch her knee when the chips arrived. He'd shoved a few in his mouth before she told him about some guy named Paul from her work. It hadn't meant anything, though it had been building up for some time. It had happened more than once. Sam reacted by yelling loud enough that parents eating nearby with their young children gave him the stink eye. Lorraine sat there stone-faced. Do you love him? Do you love me? Is it something I did? What the hell's the matter with you? Did it feel good? Better than me? She wouldn't tell him his last name or where he lived. I don't love him, she said. Why then? Sam implored. He was sobbing, inconsolable. Lorraine, on the other hand, rarely ever cried, and turned cold whenever he did. Her expression hardened as if his outpouring of emotion slaked any desire for her to feel anything. In hindsight, he was glad it wasn't the good taco spot because it would have been ruined forever. Any place that charged 75 cents for condiments could burn in hell, on principle. This, she whispered through clenched teeth. This is the problem. Why does it have to be this way with us? Someone having a meltdown. Paul was... he was a distraction. I needed to get out of this. Us. No, he said, as if that would make the moment less real. Sam shook his head, mind stalled out in the denial stage of grief. No, we love each other. We'll always love each other. You're a part of me. He searched her face, uncomprehending. It felt crazy to him that she was even another person. Her arm may as well have been his arm. That his arm had the power to turn against the rest of his body and walk away made no sense. Sam felt something in his chest crack. We're addicted to each other, she said. It's not healthy. Paul's boring, don't get me wrong, but he has stability. Stability. Sam knew what that meant.
Stability meant rich. Paul must have been rich, rich in the same way she was, rich like he'd never been and never would be. Sam reached for her just as she stood up, hesitated, and then walked out. After that morning, he'd moved into house, and they'd gone months without speaking or running into each other. Sam had made sure of it. He avoided their old haunts, telling no one where he lived, and he worked as many hours as Al had for him. It was while on a toothpaste run at Walgreens that she called his name from down the aisle. Sam couldn't believe how companionable they still felt as they hung back in the parking lot. They made small talk, and no one brought up Paul. When she suggested they run over to Polvo's for a margarita, it seemed like a great idea. A picture of House Rita's later, it seemed an even better idea to take their trip down memory lane all the way back to her apartment. He hadn't drunk a drop since. 27 days. Each one a feat. When she disappeared again, she became liar in his phone, and he tried to forget. But with a text, a single directive, he felt the pinprick of the tiniest portal open in his heart. She had such beautiful skin, especially her clavicles. Christ, and her elbows. He loved tracing his fingertips across the crest of bone on any part of her body. No, he told himself. He wanted to reconfigure his brain. Why couldn't he control when he thought about her? Why couldn't he control when she thought about him? When they first broke up, he'd watched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and High Fidelity on a loop. He stopped sleeping. One morning, Finn, sensing a need, reached out and hugged him. The two of them stood there for well over 10 minutes while Sam cried so hard he got the hiccups. Nope. Never. Again. He deleted the text. For the next 2 hours, he tidied obsessively. Jude texted again, and Sam nearly had a heart attack thinking it was Lorraine. It was another invitation to dinner, but again he begged off, citing work. He felt equal parts guilty and annoyed. He considered telling Jude he would be busy for the foreseeable future, but decided it wasn't worth the trouble. His lower back hurt, and Sam wondered if the customers could detect the crazy in his eyes. When his shift ended, he was spent. Sam settled the register and yawned. He could hear Finn in the back hauling trash. Finn unfailingly let the screen door slam, which drove Sam nuts, but this time he was too tired to bitch. The only good thing about getting up at the absolute ass crack of dawn was that he was closed by 8 and in bed sometimes by 8:15, even if all he did under the covers was blink and not drink. Earlier that year, Al had installed an impenetrable security system that amounted to a fake video camera fixed above the door and an automated gate that was already no longer automated. Sam walked outside to pull it closed. It took both hands and his full body weight.
"Put your back into it, Flacco," Finn yelled over his shoulder.
Sam laughed.
"Your mom,"
he said. Finn cackled and cracked open a beer. "Your mom?" God, he was tired. Sam's nickname in high school had been AIDS because kids are jerks and because he was so emaciated. He hated his concave body with its visible veins and the individual stringy muscles that you could watch move under his skin when he worked. Yet somewhere along the line, girls started seeing something in him other than the skinniness, and by then he stopped caring. Still, there were times when he wished he were a big, hulking, ham-fisted dude who could slam the stupid gate shut in one go.
"Sam," called a voice from the shadows.
Sam jumped and made a high-pitched, "What?" that he immediately regretted. He knew who it was instantly, and she'd for sure heard his sapless, startled, "What?"
"I texted you," Lorraine said. He could detect flint in her tone. Sam was surprised that it had taken only one afternoon for Lorraine, a.k.a. Liar, to materialize. Patience wasn't her thing, though dropping by after a disappearance was bold even for her.
"What do you want, Lorraine?" Sam shot back.
"We have to talk," she said.
Original, he thought.
What could there possibly be left to discuss?
He finished locking up. "I mean, if anything, your silence for the past month suggests there's nothing on the docket." He wished he could subtly sniff his pits to see how he smelled. Why was he only ever running into her when he was completely unprepared? Of course, she was buttoned up for work and wearing a blazer.
Liar was the worst. Seriously, Lorraine, he continued, you made it clear, we're ancient history, the Paleozoic era, older even, whatever comes before the Paleozoic era, the Anthropocene. No, wait, that's now. He shoved his sweaty hands into his pockets.
Stop talking, she said.
He scowled at her.
Please.
Lorraine stepped into the light. She was pale, paler than usual, which was already poet blouses and oh my goth levels of pallor. Sam walked toward the porch steps and sat down. She followed. The sunset smeared pink across the sky as they stared out to the street. What is it? His hand twitched for the cigarettes he didn't want to smoke in front of her.
Sam, she said, I'm late.
No joke, he thought, for the split second before the full weight of her words hit him. He took a deep breath and ran his hands through his hair. They felt numb. Of course she was late. It made sense. In fact, it was the only news it could have been. It's not as if anything ever went the way he thought it would. Lorraine, for that matter, was not returning to his life after a spell of soul-searching to tell him she still loved him. Christ. Late. They'd done it this time. The dreadful rush of adrenaline was so immediate that he clapped his hands. Just once. Some lizard brain Texas hardwiring kicked in to where all he knew was to act out the caricature of a high school football coach in times of crisis. Okay, he said in a purposeful tone. How late? Clear eyes, full heart.
I don't know, she said.
What? Sam squawked. Aren't girls supposed to, you know, keep track? Sam understood that the female reproductive system was a mysterious universe, but this seemed far-fetched. Then he thought about the teen moms on TV who accidentally had their babies on the toilet. Did you take a pregnancy test? Lorraine rolled her eyes.
Yeah, Sam.
And?
Positive.
Shit, shit, shit. How many?
4, she said. No, 3.
Now, Sam wasn't an OBGYN or anything, but this seemed an irrationally small number of sticks to pee on before any thinking human could declare themselves in or out of the unwanted pregnancy woods. In fact, Sam couldn't believe she hadn't taken at least 20, and even still Lorraine should go to the doctor for a blood test to be completely positive. Positively positive. Shit, shit, shit. Okay, he said, placing his hands on her shoulders. You have to take a bunch more. I'll take you. We'll go right now. He almost pounded her back in a high-strung jocular cheer.
Sam, you're freaking me out.
No, don't freak, he shrieked. Sam smiled with all his teeth displayed. It'll be fine. You should go to a doctor, a specialist, eliminate any doubt, for peace of mind.
A specialist? She said. You sound insane.
Sam wiped his palms on the tops of his thighs. What about your regular doctor? Don't you go to some fancy guy?
I can't go to Dr. Wisham, she said, rolling her eyes. He's my pediatrician.
Why was she still going to a pediatrician? Why are you still going to a pediatrician? It doesn't matter, he recovered. I'll pay for it. Sam wondered about the going rate for plasma donation and how much a slightly underweight human male could spare before he keeled over and died. Maybe he could donate a toe to science. Sam cleared his throat. He rubbed his chin. Most of the time they'd been good about condoms. Most of the time. I have an appointment with Planned Parenthood on Thursday, she said. It was Friday. Thursday was way too many nights away.
I can't miss work, she explained.
I'm sure they'd understand if...
I can't, she interrupted.
It's a big deal. I'm the only entry-level team member, and I'm running production on 3 tentpole activations for a client. Some random can't cover for me because I'm worried. Lorraine rolled her eyes. Sam found the rest of the word salad more offensive than worried, though he bit his tongue. It's not as if I work in fast food or anything, she peered at him guiltily. No offense. First of all, managing an artisanal coffee purveyor was not working in fast food. Second of all, you're in advertising, he said. You're not exactly saving lives. No offense. Shit. Tact. He needed to chill. Sam took another deep breath. She glared at him.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm still processing. So next week, do you need me to come with you?
Sam considered the logistics. Maybe he could borrow Finn's car.
No, she said.
Paul was probably driving her. Every time Sam thought about faceless, rich-ass Paul, he felt rage collect in the pit of his stomach and blistering pea-sized sores.
How late are you?
3 weeks?
Jesus.
3 weeks was an eternity in the life cycle of late periods, or so it seemed from everything he knew about periods, which wasn't much.
They stood in silence. Sam pulled out his cigarettes. Then he imagined pink, teeny-tiny, microscopic baby lungs coughing. He put them away.
I wanted to take the morning after pill, she said. But then I didn't, and...
Sam thought about how careless they'd both been.
Why didn't you tell me you were worried?
Sam's stomach lurched guiltily at the prospect of Liar dealing with this herself.
I thought about it.
You waited 3 weeks to text me.
I figured it was only a little late.
Well, now it's kind of very incredibly late, finished Sam.
I'm worried, Lorraine said, not meeting his eyes.
Wow. Was she going to cry? As screwed up as the circumstance was this when Sam would get to see Lorraine cry?
Well?
Sam held her, and she let him. It made him feel strong and capable.
We'll figure it out.
How?
Just that I'm here for you. I support you.
I mean, it is mine, right?
She pushed him away, hard.
Are you serious?
Well, Jesus, Laura, it could be Paul's.
His anger swelled red-hot and righteous.
I haven't been with Paul since before you, she yelled.
Sam smiled before he caught himself.
Ha! Suck it, Paul.
Sam studied Lorraine then.
Shit.
He was in way over his head. Still, he couldn't help focusing on how she was mad at him and how he was stupidly elated that he was capable of making her this mad. It was all quite possibly the most idiotic circumstance to bring a baby into, a blameless, chubby nugget of person caught in the middle of two selfish screw-ups. Sam could feel his anxiety thrum in the back of his chest.
If you are pregnant, he said slowly, what do you want to do?
He thought about the A word. A-B-O-R-T-I-O-N. A-borsh-shun. Borscht, as in the beet red soup with soft bits in it. Borscht, borscht, borscht.
I don't know if I could terminate, she said.
Terminate. Sam's mind glommed onto the glimmering red light in the Terminator's eye at the end of the movie, when the cyborg refused to die.
I'm not a child, Sam, she said. I'm not some knocked-up 15-year-old. I'm 23. That's old enough to know better. My mom had me at 24. I can't.
He stared at her, just drank her in. Blonde hair, small hands, blue blouse, black slacks. It was a fair response. It seemed exactly the sort of thing you'd know about yourself. Except Sam didn't know anything anymore.
Penny. When Penny was in ninth grade, two events of great portent occurred. One, she read Art Spiegelman's graphic novel Mouse. Two, she figured out that she wouldn't be popular until she was a grown-up, and that was fine because life was a long con. Penny had Amber Friedman's birthday party to thank for this wisdom. Amber Friedman was a girl from French class who famously woke up at 5:45 every morning to straighten her curly hair, only to set it in differently shaped curls. Everybody figured she was well off since her dad was a music journalist for Rolling Stone. And while life was tough for Penny as the daughter of a MILF, having a dad with more Instagram followers than God was also a monumental suck. Amber's dad cast a long shadow. It didn't help that his daughter wasn't cute. Not that she was ugly. She simply had one of those faces where the features were crowded into the middle like a too-big room with tiny furniture. Then there was her personality. Amber loved butting in to finish other people's sentences, even with teachers, and sneezed with a high-pitched tss
at least half a dozen times. To Penny, it seemed a bid for the wrong kind of attention. Anyway, Penny hadn't been properly invited.